Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes, they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them.
For this episode, we welcome Ryan McDougall and Kurt Klump from socialengineer.org. Ryan is the Chief Operating Officer, and Kurt is a human risk analyst. They join us to tell two stories. The first story shows how even when you've done a lot of OSINT research, it might still not be enough. In the second story, Kurt tells us how he was able to dig deep and finally find the information he was looking for. This story is a prelude to the Human Hacking Conference happening March 12th to 14th. Let's hear from Ryan and Kurt.
Hey everyone, this is Ryan McDougall and Kurt Klump from Social Engineer LLC. We're here to talk about some OSINT stories that we have and how that relates to our class that we're teaching at the Human Hacking Conference. I just wanted to start off with a little funny story before we get into the story that details out our course. It's basically how you can do so much OSINT and still be missing a piece that is extremely important to your pretext. So SECOM was tasked with breaking into this building that was a very large campus that existed within just outside of a small town. So we had to go to this small town and learn enough about the town itself to be able to come up with a good enough pretext to actually get into this campus and show the client any vulnerabilities that they have when it comes to impersonation attacks. So at SECOM, we use OSINT for every job that we do, whether it's impersonation, phishing, or vishing, or anything else that we do for our clients. OSINT is always included in that. So we spent a significant amount of time trying to research the town, the company, and the campus itself of what we were planning on impersonating our way into. And we had found that there was a local newspaper that was covering a story where the location that we were supposed to get into was breaking ground on a new building that they were going to be building. And they were having kind of a groundbreaking ceremony the week after we were going to be there. So we did some research and found some names and employees of a local newspaper that were already writing stories about this groundbreaking. And we decided to come up with a pretext of being photographers for one of these journalists to go and just take some initial pictures to kind of throw into the newspaper and just really innocuous stuff. But we felt like that was a good enough pretext to kind of get us in, allow us to take some pictures, walk around. And so we did a lot of research on who the important people were in that newspaper, in that company, so we could name drop and then maybe impersonate a couple of those people to get in. And so we arrived one day early in the engagement to try out this pretext. And so we walked up and tried to just immediately try to walk onto the campus, but the place was surrounded by a number of armed guards. So we knew we weren't going to just be able to hop a fence and walk in. And so the first guard stopped us. We dropped our story about who we were, why we were there. And they didn't see us on any particular list, so they sent us around to the main front door. So we walked around to the front door, and as soon as we entered, we were in what's called like a man trap, where it's an area where you really can't get in or out without somebody helping you get in or out. And so they allows you to be vetted before you're allowed onto the facility. So we handed over our credentials that we had made and handed them over to the guard behind the bulletproof glass. And he took our credentials, he took our story, and he walked back into the back room. And we thought everything was going great. And like, we dropped all the names we were supposed to drop. We thought we had a very convincing story. And then a few minutes went by and a couple of armed guards came walking out and they kind of just looked at us from behind the glass. They kind of smirked and smiled and then walked back. And we didn't really know what that was all about. So we just kind of kept with our pretext, and anyone who asked us questions, we answered them the same way. And then a few more minutes, a couple more guards came out, looked at us, laughed, walked back. And this happened for about 10 or 15 minutes where 7 or 8 guards ended up coming out looking at us, and we started to feel like we were in a bad situation. So eventually the original person who took our credentials came back. He handed our credentials back to us and he said, "There's no way we're getting on this facility." And we tried to talk our way in by saying, you know, well, we're with this person, this reporter sent us there. And the guy just stood up and he looked us straight in the eye and he just said, "You know, that person is my cousin, and I just called him, and he has no idea who you are, so there's no way you're getting into this facility." And we looked at each other, and there's just no way that we could have figured that out through the OSINT that we were looking for. We had so much information to back up our story. And the one thing that we were missing was that this reporter's cousin actually worked at the facility that we were trying to break into. So it just goes to show you that, you know, you can do a lot of research, but you still have to be able to be adaptable and flex a little bit when the situation changes, especially when you're in an impersonation attack. So you got to do as much research as you can. We really had everything that we needed, and then all of a sudden that one detail just slipped it and it wrecked our whole pretext. Luckily, we weren't handcuffed that particular day, but that happened a couple days later via another pretext. So we got to feel the wrath of the armed security guards, but not particularly that day. But I just wanted to tell that story mainly because when you're doing OSINT, you can go down so many different rabbit holes and you think you're finding useful information. And it really takes a lot of effort to figure out that maybe the information you're finding isn't what you actually need to accomplish your task. And you just got to be flexible enough to try new research points, new data paths, and find what you need to get your pretext done. And they really don't have to be fully flushed out. You just have to have enough information so when people start asking you questions, you can answer them believably, like they understand what you're saying. You're not just making stuff up. You actually have information that means something to the person that you're trying to convince. So, you know, that particular situation didn't work out. We were successful later on in the week with other bits of attacks that we were doing, but that particular one I thought was pretty funny because all the security guards in the whole facility apparently were coming by and just came by to laugh at us, and we didn't really know what was going on until the very end. So just remember that the next time you're in a situation where something seems to be going a little weird, maybe you just need to get one additional piece of information that you might have missed the first time. So I'm here with Kurt Klump as well, and he's one of the trainers for HHC. We're doing a 3-day course on how to perform what's called a social engineer risk assessment, which is a product that we do at SECOM to just show vulnerability in clients, whether it's for an individual or for a company. We do a lot of OSINT. Like I said before, we do OSINT on every project that we do. So this is a product that we do where we do a lot of OSINT research on a particular target or company, and then we come up with attacks for how to show that vulnerability based on the information that's disclosed. So I'll let Kurt take over, and he's going to tell a quick story about one of those experiences.
Hello. Thank you, Ryan. I really love that story. I'm teaching day two at the CIRA course at the Human Hacking Conference, the vishing day, and man, I really love stories about getting shut down and burned. They're just my favorite.
The best way to learn.
That's the best way to learn. It's also like the funniest scenario. The wins feel really good, but when you get shut down really well, they're hysterical. All right, so let's talk about a CIRA rabbit hole that I went down and then a success. I was about a little over a year ago, I was doing, I'd done a lot of general corporate OSINT for social engineer at the time, but this was maybe my second or third CIRA that I'd done. And, I was researching a C-suite executive, and this guy was a ghost. He just did not really exist on the internet except for corporate releases from the client, and he'd played some sports in college, so I was able to find some records of that. Nothing huge. Along the way, though, I was able to get his wife's name, and through her, a couple of his children's names. I found her by, you know what? I just typed, I think I searched him on Facebook and I searched him on Instagram, and she came up instead. Just luckily, I got her Instagram and her Facebook. And I think it might be because he probably had a Facebook that he took down, but there was some residual linkage of him like tagged in her, you know. So I knew it was his wife because it was the two of them together in her Facebook profile photo, and then I knew who she was on Instagram. So that was something. One of the first things I always do when I do a CIRA is I try to find the target's address, just because it's useful to have and useful to know if that's out there. And, you know, the usual stops that I make, the people search engines, like advanced background checks, had nothing on him. His information was even gone off of those. So good for him, bad for me. But what I did find was the town he lived in. And I was able to take that and his wife's name, and I figured I'd run out of things to Google. So I just Googled the two of those, and I found her business, which was located in that town. And so I recorded that in my notes with the business address and what she did. And then I Googled the name of the business and looked around at that. And I found an article in a magazine about some Christmas decoration and design she did on her own home. And in that were pictures of the Target and the rest of the family with their children's names on the stockings. I think the family dog's name on the bowl, all like tiny little nuggets of PII that could be useful someday. And at the end of the article was a address to get in touch with her for her business. And I knew from recording the other one that it was different than the new downtown shop that she had. Mm-hmm. So, I threw that into Google Maps and went to Street View, and there it was, the house that I had just been looking at in that article. So I knew, so I had his address. Well, I thought I had his address. It was an older article, so I had to go and plug it into like realtor.com and some other real estate sites to make sure that it hadn't been sold since. And it hadn't. And so, you know, that was like a nice little rabbit hole that got me something I was looking for. All the fishing pretexts that I could design with that were a little too dark, so we didn't end up using them at all, but it's good for them to know that that is out there and findable. We did, I think Ryan, after all my pretexts were too dark, Ryan and I did a little more Googling, and we were able to find a legal document that he was named in, and took that case number, designed a spearfish, and it was very successful at a very quick click. So yeah, that win felt nice.
Yeah, and that story is actually a really great example of something that we call a digital shadow that people cast across the internet. So when you're doing OSINT, if your initial target is a ghost, like this particular one was, really branching out into their family members or into their surrounding towns can really start to leverage that information to get closer to them, because they never know, you never know who is posting stuff about you if you don't know that someone took a picture and you just happen to be in it, and it's posted on someone else's social media. That really plays into how to build up this profile of our target. And not to mention the legal document bit I love, because I love phishing lawyers. Like, that's my absolute favorite, because when you're doing OSINT on lawyers, you can find, I've found virtually meaningless to me legal documents. And if you throw in enough of those little bits and pieces out of real legal documents, they bite. You know, I had one when I was doing OSINT on one particular lawyer. He had a dispute of land with his neighbor where his driveway was too far into his neighbor's yard. And it was some court case and it was recently closed. But I saw all these legal documents. And so I sent in a fish about the case being reopened due to new evidence. And not only did he click it, but he sent it to his entire legal team. And every single member of the legal team ended up clicking that fish, because there was enough legalese in there that I personally didn't even understand. But there was enough legalese in there to get them confused enough to start clicking links to get more details. So I love legal-based fish. Those are my favorite.
They're so good. Such a good emotional trigger, too.
Yeah, it really is. Especially when something looks weird to them, they just have to understand it. It's wonderful. Makes them click every time.
Yeah.
But so we're going to be doing, so we're doing this type of class. It's called the Social Engineering Risk Assessment. We're doing this class at the Human Hacking Conference. And the first day is going to be all OSINT, where you bring targets, or we supply you targets, or both, where we do OSINT for the entire day on day one. And then you take all that information, and then you go to the next day, which is the vishing class, which is with Kurt and Shelby, which will be teaching the vishing part, where you take all the OSINT from day one and you apply that and you actually make real phone calls to your targets to try to gain more information from them. So we're not trying to compromise them. We're not doing anything malicious. It's basically like an SECTF style, if anyone's familiar with that from the SE Village. We're going to be doing that type of calls on the second day, and we take all of that new information, and then you go into the third day with Chris and Maxie, and you do a phishing class where you get to write multiple spearfish against your targets and get them all graded. And you'll learn the whole process of how to go from just gathering information to how to execute attacks all in this 3-day class. And it's only at the Human Hacking Conference. And we have that class, and then we have a whole bunch of other classes of experts in their field from all around the world. You'll never see all these people in the same place ever except at the Human Hacking Conference. So you should really go check it out. Sign up for our class, sign up for one of the other trainer classes. You'll definitely enjoy it. You'll definitely get something out of it. And doesn't matter what your actual industry is. If you're in InfoSec, it'll help you. If you're not in InfoSec and you're in some other industry, it will also help you. So spread the word. It's at humanhackingconference.com. So hope we see all you guys there. When this podcast ends up getting released, we'll probably include a promo code. So you, at the end of this, you'll hear a promo code that you can get some money off a ticket. It'll be a great time. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, please come. Shelby's been on the podcast before too, my co-trainer. She's one of the best visionaries I've ever heard. She's really great to learn from.
It'll be a fun time. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we enjoyed making them.